Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Amy Costello. About 10% of the world's population live with disabilities, according to the United Nations. Some call people with disabilities the world's largest minority. And when it comes to one of the world's great pandemics, people with disabilities are not immune. A 2004 global survey on disability and HIV/AIDS conducted by Yale University and the World Bank found people with disabilities face the same risks or even greater risk for contracting HIV as people without disabilities. Even so, people with disabilities say they often feel invisible when it comes to discussions about sex, the primary means of HIV infection.
Well, I think that historically, people with disabilities have been seen as asexual.
Miroslava Tatarin is an advisor on disability and AIDS for AIDS-Free World, an international advocacy group. She also has a disability.
You don't usually see images of people with disabilities showing affection, more love, or expressing their sexuality.
Tatarin says just like anyone else, people with disabilities are definitely interested in sex.
On a personal level, often that's what people talk about the most or want to talk about because we all want to have good, positive, loving relationships.
But instead of feeling like they're part of the conversation, people like Winston Zulu are often sidelined and stigmatized. Zulu contracted polio when he was a child in Zambia. Now he uses crutches or a wheelchair to get around. Zulu's also been HIV positive for more than 20 years. He says, sure, he faces stigma when people find out he's HIV positive, but that's nothing compared to the way people underestimate him and his manhood just because he has a bum leg.
People think if your leg is not working, it's a reflection of a general weakness for the whole of you. And perhaps this is the reason why they think everything, including everything in your pants, are disabled, so you can't have sex.
But of course people with disabilities have sex. That's how Zulu contracted HIV. Now he travels the world speaking about HIV, tuberculosis, and disability, and the intersections among these conditions. During one of Zulu's speaking engagements, someone in the audience asked him a question about his HIV.
One of the women said, how did you get it? And I said, sexually. She looked at me like up and down and said, but how? You know, just like that. Like it's the most complicated thing to have sex.
There can be dire consequences when we assume that people with disabilities don't have sex or aren't even capable of having it. In an era of AIDS, talking about sex, sexually transmitted diseases, and how to practice safer sex has never been more important. The Yale study found that adolescents and adults with disabilities are just as likely to be sexually active as anyone else. Despite this, Tatarin says young people with disabilities are still seen as asexual. As a result, they're kept out of life-altering and potentially life-saving discussions.
Because there's this perception of asexuality amongst children with disabilities and this historical desire to protect disabled children, then often there's anecdotal evidence that children are taken out of sexual health classes because they don't need to worry about that and we want to protect them from that stuff. Or they'll never have the opportunity to have sex anyway, so we don't need to trouble them.
Just ensuring that children with disabilities have equal access to sex ed in schools may not be enough. Tatarin says in many places in the developing world, you may not even find disabled children in schools anyway.
The levels of education amongst children with disabilities are lower. So if the primary source of sexual health education is at school and those children aren't attending school, then right away there's going to be a gap.
Naturally, many of the girls and boys who are shut out of discussions about sexual health grow up to become mothers and fathers themselves. In Zambia, where Winston Zulu is from, he says people with disabilities are routinely denied access to family planning clinics and services.
Even when there is evidence they're having more and more children, either the family planning clinic is not accessible or when information is being distributed in the community, they are bypassed because everyone thinks, well, why give information about family planning to people who do not have sex anyway or who shouldn't have sex?
80% of people with disabilities live in the developing world, according to the United Nations. Zulu says for these people, no matter the kind of disabilities they face, there's bound to be a specific barrier to receiving the health services they deserve.
For instance, if you have a wheelchair and you go to an aid service organization and the first thing you see are all these flight of stairs, you're immediately discouraged. But secondly, if you are deaf, HIV testing and counseling is supposed to be confidential. If you go into this service You have to go with someone who can interpret for you, which takes away the confidentiality part. So in the end, people don't turn up.
People with disabilities may be more vulnerable to HIV infection, especially those whose disabilities are so severe that they stay in institutions or need constant care.
People are pretty much entirely at the mercy of caregivers. And if the perpetrators of the abuse are caregivers, it's very difficult to report that or to change that. If people are at risk of rape, then there's a higher risk of becoming infected with HIV.
But Tatirin says there's been some progress in recent years, in part because of the AIDS epidemic.
It's forced groups to discuss sexuality because it becomes a matter of life and death. So in disabled people's organizations in sub-Saharan Africa, they were losing so many of their own members to HIV, so it became an issue that was unavoidable. And if you want to address HIV and AIDS, you need to address questions of sexuality.
And there's been other kinds of progress in reaching people with disabilities in sub-Saharan Africa. Tatirin says in Kenya, an AIDS organization decided to reach out to the hearing impaired.
They decided that's a community that they wanted to target, and they trained and hired deaf HIV counselors. And then they didn't need interpreters because all the counselors themselves were deaf.
The program was so successful that the organization has now begun reaching out to other populations. Despite the fact that people with disabilities face many risk factors for contracting HIV, Tatirin says there's precious little data on the subject.
People with disabilities have been so marginalized that it hasn't been something that people have bothered to gather data about, which many people feel is a problem. If only because if you're looking for funding to fund programs, funders want data. They want to know, okay, so you want to look at disability, how many people is that, where?
Of course, getting answers to those questions is critical in formulating responses to the unique needs of disabled people with HIV, and ideally helping to prevent them from contracting HIV in the first place. Tatirin says she sees reason for optimism. In the past 5 years, she says there's been a growing acceptance of the importance of disability rights within the human rights discourse. The question now, she says, is how do we act on it? And that's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about Human Rights Watch, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. And we want to hear your feedback. You can get in touch at podcast@hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Amy Costello.